POA1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. On today's program, I report on efforts by the Japanese military to recruit more women. Brian Lin has a story on Microsoft PCs with built-in AI. Dan Friedel and Anna Mateo have a story on businesses aiming to get more Africans using smartphones. Later, John Russell presents the Everyday Grammar Lesson on Memorial Day. But first, Japan is undergoing its biggest military buildup since World War II, but it is struggling to fill its ranks with women. The Japanese military has faced a series of sexual harassment cases in recent years. The number of women who signed up to join the Self-Defense Forces, or SDF, decreased by 12% in the year that ended in March 2023. The drop followed several years of notable growth. Some victims of harassment have said the culture within the military may prevent women from signing up. It has been 9 months since the Defense Ministry promised to take serious measures, but it still has no plans to create a national system for reviewing anti-harassment training standards. The information comes from two Defense Ministry officials responsible for training. An independent group of experts had recommended that the Defense Ministry create such a system. The government-appointed group identified in a report published in August that the military provided poor harassment education. The training made only limited mention of sexual harassment. There was also a lack of oversight of such training. One servicewoman is taking legal action against the government over an alleged sexual harassment incident. She said in an interview that the education she received over the past 10 years was ineffective. Women make up just 9% of military service members in Japan. In the United States, by comparison, 17% of military service members are women. The Defense Ministry told Reuters reporters that it has held harassment prevention talks by outside experts since 2023. It did not respond to questions about whether it would take the independent group's recommendation to provide oversight of training. Rina Gonoi is a former soldier. She went public with allegations of sexual abuse in 2022. After she came forward, the Defense Ministry found more than 170 alleged sexual harassment incidents in the SDF. Another alleged victim was an Okinawa-based servicewoman. She accused a senior official of making sexual comments toward her in 2013. She was then publicly named in harassment training materials given to her colleagues in 2014, she told Reuters. The person who allegedly made the sexual comments, however, was not identified in the materials. Reuters does not name alleged victims of sexual harassment. Her allegations were supported by documents in the legal action she filed last year. The Defense Ministry offers yearly online training on general harassment. It also provides training materials to officers for in-person sessions. But it does not follow how or when the officers carry out harassment training, the two defense officials said. In April, Reuters attended a harassment prevention course given to over 100 mid-ranking military officers at a base outside Tokyo. Instructor Kiko Yoshimoto presented harassment as a communication problem. She centered discussions on generational differences. Generational differences make it hard for people to communicate, she said. She added that military service people must understand the basics of communication before they can fully understand sexual harassment. Ginoy and the Okinawa-based servicewoman have criticized the system as ineffective. People would say everyone put up with that kind of behavior. It was normal back in our time. But these issues are being passed down to my generation because nothing was done to stop it, the servicewoman told Reuters in March. The defense ministry officials said that training on sexual harassment mostly takes place within a larger anti-harassment course. At the two-hour training session that Reuters attended, about 2 minutes were related to sexual harassment. The two officers said there were concerns within the military that too much attention on harassment could create operational issues. One officer suggested it might lead to unfair complaints.
American software maker Microsoft says it will release new computer models with built-in artificial intelligence, AI, tools. The new computers will be equipped with a new version of Microsoft's existing AI tool called Copilot. Copilot can operate across a series of Microsoft Business products. The Copilot service is based on OpenAI's ChatGPT tool, which launched in late 2022. ChatGPT is an AI tool designed to interact smoothly with humans and perform high-level writing and creative work. Such tools are also known as chatbots or generative AI. Microsoft is a major investor in OpenAI. It is providing computing power and support for ChatGPT's operations. Microsoft recently introduced the new tools at an event at its headquarters in Seattle, Washington. Chief Executive Satya Nadella announced that the new computers will come loaded with the new Copilot Plus system. The company said these new Windows-based PCs, which it calls AI-ready, will be the fastest, most intelligent ever built. The event came one day before Microsoft's yearly developer conference. That is where Microsoft introduces its latest new products and services to developers and the public. The announcement is Microsoft's latest move to deploy OpenAI's technology through Copilot to many product offerings. The system is already available for the company's Teams, Outlook, Bing search engine, and Windows operating system. Microsoft said its AI-based PCs will start being released on June 18th on the company's own Surface models. It will also be on PCs produced by partners. These include Lenovo, Dell, Acer, and HP. These improvements provide the most compelling reason to upgrade your PC in a long time, said Microsoft Vice President Yusuf Mehdi. Microsoft said the AI operations on the new PCs will take place on the device itself rather than a cloud server. This means users will not have to wait for information to be sent to and from the company's data centers or pay extra money for this service. Microsoft has also promised that any tracking activity will only be done and saved on the device, not on company servers. Users will also be able to choose not to be tracked, the company added. The Copilot Plus AI offerings include live language translation and image creation. It also offers the ability to interact with the PCs through voice commands instead of clicking to perform certain jobs. The new offerings also include a tool called Windows Recall. This gives the Copilot Plus assistant what Microsoft describes as a photographic memory of a person's computer activity. The tool is designed to remember the things a user does on the PC in an effort to predict what the user might want to do next. It's a step toward machines that instantly see us, hear, reason about our intent and our surroundings, Microsoft's Nadella said. He added, "We're entering this new era where computers not only understand us, but can actually anticipate what we want and our intent." Nadella's announcement on AI comes shortly after some other major technology players announced new releases of their latest AI assistance systems. Last week, Google introduced an improved search engine that shows brief AI-produced results before direct website links. The company also showed off an AI assistant called Astra, which is still in development. Astra is designed to be able to see and talk about things shown through a smartphone's camera. OpenAI introduced its latest chatbot version, ChatGPT 4.0, last week. Company officials demonstrated the new tool, which showed improved human characteristics that can give opinions about things. The new version also comes with tools that aim to judge a person's emotions. I'm Brian Lynn.
Modern smartphones are still seen as a curiosity in some parts of sub-Saharan Africa. Experts believe mobile internet service is an important tool for economic growth in places such as Ghana. However, only about 25% of adults in the area south of the Sahara Desert have a tool that provides internet service. Anita Akperi is one person who uses an internet-connected smart mobile phone in her food business in Ghana's capital, Accra. She makes rice and dumplings, a kind of local food. Her phone alerts her when a new order comes in. Claire Sibthorpe is head of digital inclusion at the Britain-based mobile phone manufacturers group, GSMA. She said the cost of new phones is the main barrier to more Africans getting internet service. The lowest priced smartphones still cost about 95% of monthly pay for the poorest 20% of the population. Jenny Acker is a professor at Tufts University near Boston, Massachusetts. She said, "Mobile technology is more important in Africa than in more developed parts of the world." She said, "The small programs that run on smartphones, called apps, are able to overcome a lack of infrastructure. That is why more people in Africa need phones that connect to the internet." She said people without bank accounts use their phones to send and receive mobile money. Other people can use apps that help with farming. Still others use apps that help them learn languages.
Unity Networks has a super app that permits smartphone users in poor places to use lots of other apps. The business also has a payment plan that permits people in Ghana who do not have much money to get smartphones. Cyril Fianyo is a farmer who uses the plan. He is a 64-year-old farmer in the country's Eastern Volta area. He paid about $25 to get his phone and will pay the remaining $66 in regular payments. The phone has an app called Cocoa Link that helps him learn planting methods for his cocoa crop. In the past, Fianyo used his intuition to decide when to plant. However, now he thinks Cocoa Link will look at the upcoming weather and tell him the right time to plant. He hopes it will lead to a bigger crop. Kami Dar is chief of Unity Networks. He said mobile phones could also improve Africa's healthcare system. So far, he said, Unity has 650 participants in its program that permits regular payments over time. The goal is to have 100,000 people taking part within 5 years. Unity, however, will only reach its customer goal if more people in Ghana learn how to use smartphones. But there is both a language barrier and a technology barrier. Although many people in Ghana speak English, some cannot read the language. In addition, many people do not know how to operate a smartphone. They will have to learn to read English and learn how to use the phone. The barriers mean many people decide a smartphone is not worth the cost.
Alain Capochichi is trying to fix that problem. He is the head of Serco Group, a company that developed a smartphone that works with only voice commands. If you buy a car, it's because you can drive it. The voice control, he said, will permit more people to drive their smartphone. His system supports 50 African languages, including Swahili, Yoruba, and Wolof. Acker, the professor near Boston, said, "It is unclear at this time how many apps will be able to improve life in Africa." She has looked at health and farming apps. She said, "The health apps mostly tell people when to take medicine or advise them of the need to be vaccinated. The farming apps," she noted, "do not clearly show evidence of producing more productive crops." Capochichi said one reason people are unsure about investing in smartphones is the lack of useful apps. Dar from Unity Networks said app makers are trying to do better. He gave the example of an app that helps cocoa farmers save money for retirement. At first, the app was hard to use, so many farmers needed help or decided it was not worth their time. But the company that provided the savings service fixed some of the problems. Over time, the apps improve. One example is a health app that helps women follow their reproductive or menstrual cycle to avoid pregnancy. Another app helps people find medicinal plants. Acker said, "More investment in public services is needed for Africa." But she also worried about a dependence on smartphones and said some people could lose personal data to criminals or hackers. The expert noted that companies that make apps can only do well if they have more users. Companies that are creating payment plans for Africans can only make money if they get more customers. In addition, Acker noted, the phones can still make a difference for some. She noted that the United Nations says over 700 million people around the world are illiterate, meaning they cannot read or write any language. Acker said smartphones can help people learn to read and write. However, curiosity may still be the biggest driver of smartphone sales, especially if the cost is not so high. Back in Fianyo's fields, his new smartphone has attracted interest. "This is something I would like to be part of," said neighboring farmer Godswe Kwamiga. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Anna Mateo.
Memorial Day is an American holiday that honors the memory of people who died while serving in the U.S. military. This year, it will be celebrated on Monday, May 27th. You might read or hear about Memorial Day ceremonies in the United States. The American president, for example, often gives a speech. In today's Everyday Grammar, we will explore the connection between Memorial Day, grammar, and speeches. It might sound strange to you, but ceremonies can teach you a lot about the English language, particularly verbs and adjectives. Let's start our report with part of a speech given by former President Ronald Reagan in 1984. Reagan uses terms such as recall, which means to remember, and words such as valor, meaning bravery or courage.
My fellow Americans, Memorial Day is a day of ceremonies and speeches. Throughout America today, we honor the dead of our wars. We recall their valor and their sacrifices. We remember they gave their lives so that others might live.
A few verbs, honor, recall, remember, play an important part in Reagan's speech. These verbs are all in the simple form. English has several verb forms. The simple and the progressive are two of them. English speakers are more likely to use the simple form than the progressive form, particularly in speaking. So, you are more likely to hear "we honor" instead of "we are honoring," or "we recall" instead of "we are recalling." Specifically, Reagan used what is called the simple present, the simple form of the verb in the present. But the so-called simple present does not always line up exactly with the present time. Reagan uses the simple present to describe something that is generally true about Memorial Day. He is not exactly talking about only the present moment in time. This idea is somewhat difficult, and it raises an important issue. English verb forms, sometimes called tenses in grammar books, do not always cleanly line up with exact points in time. Another Memorial Day speech, given in 1914 by former President Woodrow Wilson, can teach us about some of the language choices American presidents often make when giving speeches. Wilson suggested that Americans are sometimes known to be careless in their choice of words. He added, "Yet it is interesting to note that there are some words about which we are very careful." As an example, Wilson said Americans use the adjective great in many different situations. But, he added, there is another word Americans are very careful to use, the adjective noble. "We never call a man noble who serves only himself," Wilson said. Many other American presidents have been careful in using noble in their Memorial Day speeches as well. For example, Reagan, in the same 1984 speech from earlier in this report, said the following:
"A grateful nation opens her heart today in gratitude for their sacrifice, for their courage, and for their noble service."
Although today's report discussed American presidents, speeches, and language choices, you can use the general ideas in many different situations. For example, think of a ceremony or remembrance in your own country. Think about what kinds of verbs and adjectives speakers of your language use in that situation. Then compare your own language to the kinds of choices that English speakers might make. And although the idea of Memorial Day is serious, you can use some of the ideas you learned today to talk about fun, light-hearted celebrations. Think of how to use the simple present to talk about activities that usually take place on that day. And think about specific adjectives that are correct for the event. I'm John Russell.
Just heard this week's Everyday Grammar. John Russell joins us now to talk a little bit more about the lesson. Welcome, John.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me on the show.
In today's lesson, we learned about the simple present verb form, a verb form that does not always line up neatly with the present time. One use of the simple present is to talk about regular, repeated actions.
That's right.
Since Memorial Day is approaching, perhaps we could describe what we generally do on the holiday by using the simple present.
That's a great idea. On Memorial Day, I spend time with my family. We go for a walk or a hike, and then we cook dinner.
In your example, you use the simple present, I spend, we go, we cook.
That's right. What about you, Dan?
On Memorial Day, I am also usually with my family. We like to play golf, and sometimes we barbecue outside. So we like to eat classic American food like burgers and hot dogs.
And in your example, you used the simple present. I am, we like, we barbecue.
That's right. Thanks for coming on the show today, John.
Thanks for having me.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.